This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
Free thinkers everywhere, I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and welcome to Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. The Catholic Church is the answer to a pedophile's prayers.
And that'll tell you something about the topic of this week's program.
This is the weekend of April the 17th, 2010. Free Thought Radio is broadcasting in Madison, Wisconsin, also airing in Atlanta, Anchorage, Grand Rapids, Michigan, and Monterey, California, and podcasting into the cosmos everywhere.
Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. If you're a new listener and you don't know what the Freedom From Religion Foundation is, let me tell you. We're the largest association of like-minded people, atheists, agnostics, in the United States and North America. And we work for two things. We educate the public, that's you listening, about non-theism, and we also work to defend the constitutional principle of the separation of church and state. We work very hard to defend that principle. We have currently 9 lawsuits. We've taken over 50. We don't just talk, we act.
We'll be talking on the second half of today's show, Free Thought Radio, about the Catholic scandals. We'll be talking with an investigative reporter, William Lobdell. He's the author of the book called Losing My Religion, whose own experiences covering Catholic crimes against children and Catholic cover-up were part of his own personal wake-up call in becoming an atheist.
And we will return to that topic of Catholic pedophilia scandals, but first, I do want to comment on some other news developments, and so does Dan.
It's a good sign of the times that a resolution to honor the 100th anniversary of the Boy Scouts of America was blocked in the California legislature earlier this week. Critics of the resolution cited the group's ban on gay and atheist leaders. The head of the Judiciary Committee, Assemblyman Mike Feuer of West Hollywood, noted that while individual scouts have done some great things, the state cannot be on the record endorsing the Boy Scout of America's discriminatory membership policy.
And the discrimination goes further than barring gay and atheist leaders. The Boy Scouts of America has expelled many non-religious kids, including Eagle Scouts, when it becomes known that they're atheists or agnostics. And technically, every scout's family is supposed to abide by a statement of religious principles. The Boy Scouts of America says that to be good, you have to believe in a creator. So while individual troops may ignore this provision, that is the view set in stone of Boy Scouts of America, and it's a very wrong view. It shouldn't be considered socially acceptable. It has been, so this is really a welcome change.
So kudos to those in the California legislature who had the guts to oppose that resolution, which praises the discriminatory Boy Scouts.
And in the ghastly news department, a gunman lay in wait to shoot and kill an 18-year-old woman in Kandahar, Afghanistan, as she left work at a U.S.-based development company on Tuesday. The Taliban was a suspect, since the Taliban has been targeting and threatening women again, women who work, especially those who work for foreign organizations, or those who attend school. Associated Press reports that bands of thugs are harassing women, those in the workplace, those in schools, and of course those who avoid that terrible Afghani burqa. The situation for women's rights is disintegrating fast in Afghanistan. And imagine, because of religion, an 18-year-old has been slain because she wanted a job. Women should not face death for going to school. We should not face death for wanting not to be covered head to toe in a filthy shroud.
And also, in some somewhat related news, it was reported earlier this week that a 13-year-old Yemeni child bride bled to death shortly after being married to a 23-year-old man. He drugged her with tranquilizers. He tied her down, repeatedly raped her. The child's mother reported that before she lost consciousness and died, she looked like she was butchered.
And this is a terrible story. The 13-year-old had understandably resisted having sex with her rapist husband. He then obtained performance-enhancing drugs. She was extensively torn around her vagina and rectum. She bled to death. Yemen is one of the world's theocracies, and its country's laws are based on Sharia, which permit child marriages. And this is just one of many life and death reasons why we must all oppose theocracy anywhere and everywhere, and why we should work to buttress and safeguard the United States' very precious and very besieged wall of separation between church and state, because this is what happens in a theocracy. We have 18-year-old girls gunned down for working, 13-year-olds raped and tortured by their adult husbands. Another recent case we hadn't mentioned on Free Thought Radio was a 13-year-old Yemeni girl who died giving birth, a wife.
And that brings us back to another theocracy, I think the largest and oldest theocracy in the world.
The smallest.
And the smallest.
Are you joking?
Well, it's the largest in membership, but in real estate, it's the smallest. The Vatican, and news of the week, and this falls into the same category of religion has a lot to answer for, is the brilliant suggestion by eminent atheists Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens that the Pope be arrested when he visits Britain in September and be put on trial for cover-up of sexual abuse in the Catholic Church. Dawkins, of course, is the evolutionary biologist. He's the author of the book The God Delusion, and Chris Hitchens is the journalist and author of God Is Not Great. We tried to get both of them on the phone today, but they're both on the road.
And so we'll have to get them back on the show. But a short recap, of course, of all of this is that this call comes after revelation after revelation against cover-up, showing cover-up in the Vatican Church. We have the 60-plus years of sexual abuse and beatings of hundreds of orphans and children who'd been placed into Catholic institutions at the hands of priests and nuns in Ireland since the 1950s. The revelation that nearly 200 deaf boys here in Wisconsin were sexually molested and abused by one priest, Reverend Lawrence C. Murphy, over a 25-year period. And of course, Pope Benedict, then Cardinal Ratzinger, dragged the Vatican feet over having a trial or taking any disciplinary action against Father Murphy. And when he died, he was given a fancy send-off by the church, despite years of tenacious protest by these victims and their families. And then we add to that the revelations last week that a priest, Stephen Keasley of Oakland, who had admitted he had tied up and raped many children, had asked the church to defrock him. That request went before the Pope, then Archbishop Ratzinger, Cardinal Ratzinger, who did not remove that priest for 2 years. The priest had already pleaded guilty to lewd contact with two boys, 11 and 12. So the priest went on to be accused of molesting more children in the interim between his defrockment. And we have a clip from one of many of Keasley's victims.
This guy is a monster, serial predator. I am at a loss as to how anybody could find any part of that, whether canon law, judicial law, any type of law, how they could find that in any way acceptable. It's always been wrong to hurt a child. I don't care whose laws you're talking about.
That's a woman named Anne, a victim of Father Keasley in California. So the current Pope knew about this. He knew a priest was raping children and did nothing about it. And that's the big issue. A week ago Saturday, the Vatican was still insisting Pope Benedict did nothing wrong. In every instance to date, the Vatican has absolved the Pope of responsibility by blaming the underlings. In the Oakland, California case, the Vatican said it was the responsibility of the bishop, not the Pope, to handle the case. In fact, Bishop John Cummins had written Ratzinger when he was in charge of these cases and asked the Vatican to agree to Keasley's own request to be defrocked.
And, of course, the Pope's role had become much earlier, and we reported on Free Thought Radio when he was the Archbishop of Munich. He was aware of parental complaints, three sets, about a priest that was molesting their children. The priest did not deny it, and he soon got back to a Munich parish where Ratzinger was the Archbishop. And this guy was still around children as of a month ago until stories got him removed in Bavaria. So Dawkins and Hitchens have hired attorneys to investigate the possibility of prosecuting the Pope for crimes against humanity.
And the Vatican contends the Pope's immune from prosecution because he's the head of a state, which is really ridiculous. The Vatican is the headquarters of the Roman Catholic Church. It's only 0.44 square kilometers, 0.17 miles. It's smaller than Disneyland, the smallest so-called state in the world.
And Dan, the Catholic adherents are not considered members of that country. It's like between 300 and 1,000 max that they can claim belong to their so-called country. And the United Nations significantly does not recognize the Pope as a head of state. And therefore, Hitchens and Dawkins and their attorneys are pointing out that the Vatican as a state was actually a construct of Mussolini, and therefore that it would be possible to prosecute. And the options include various things. You can read about it at our website or at The Guardian. But it's a very fascinating suggestion. And last week, Richard Dawkins wrote an article in The Guardian that the Pope should stand trial. And coming up, we're going to listen to Christopher Hitchens explain why he wants to arrest the Pope. And now we want to play a little bit of my co-host Dan Barker's famous Stay Away Pope Polka, first played in the 1980s in America to protest a very expensive visit at taxpayer expense by the Pope to the United States. And this music is now being played to accompany images of photographs of a March 28th huge rally in London by humanists asking the Pope to resign. And Dan, how can people access these pictures online?
Well, you can see a video of that. Our editor, Bill Dunn, is putting up on our website every day from the headlines. Is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
News from the headlines. You can go to our webpage and go to news and then scroll down to from the headlines. Go down to April 13th to see the video of this protest of the Pope, which includes the song, the Stay Away Pope Polka song.
Or you can just YouTube it, and here it is.
Pope, stay away. Don't come back some other day. It's worse than a sin that we have to pay to hear you preach against the American way. How dare you show your face in the great USA, where daters like you are out of place. We believe in freedom and democracy here, and fairness for the whole human race. Now here you come parading in your pompous royal clatter, pretending that you govern the earth. But a million mouths are free while the church is growing fatter. That tells us just how much you are worth. Stay away. Don't come back some other day. It's worse than a sin that we have to pay to reach against the American way.
I'm Annie Laurie Geller with Dan Barker. I know some of the people in that chorus. I can hear my dad.
And yourself, too.
And so that was the Stay Away Pope Polka, and Free Thought Radio will be right back after this short break to listen to Christopher Hitchens explain why he wants to arrest the Pope.
Hey, my name is Barb Hazlett from Hancock, Wisconsin, and I'm on Free Thought Radio. And I love Free Thought Radio.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio. And let me ask you, Annie Laurie, since we're talking about Hitchens and Dawkins wanting to arrest the Pope, is the Pope a head of a state?
Well, of course, we don't think he is. The United Nations doesn't think he is. And based on that fact, we are going to renew our request to the U.S. president, first made to Reagan when he created an ambassadorship with the Vatican.
Back in the 80s.
This tie be severed. It's totally inappropriate. We do not have a relationship, nor should we, with Mecca, for example. It's exactly the same thing. It's just singling out and favoring one religion over other religions, and it's totally inappropriate. And this is kind of at the heart of the problem, that people have been, it's been hands off the Vatican, hands off priests, hands off the cover-up, hands off the Pope.
And at the time, in the 1980s, we pointed out that the Vatican is smaller than Disneyland, and yet we don't recognize Mickey Mouse as an ambassador from Disneyland.
Yes, and so if you can go to our website to look up our press release and action alert, and you can join in on this. This is a very concrete thing for the separation of church and state everyone can do. Now, as you can tell, we've been talking about the Catholic scandal that won't go away over priestly pedophilia and cover-up. And we've been talking about the fact that Christopher Hitchens has called for the arrest of the Pope when he comes to British soil. We have a short clip of Christopher Hitchens, since he wasn't available to do the show today, from an interview on MSNBC.
So this week.
This week. Let's listen.
What we have is very plain evidence, some of it with the Pope's own signature on it, as well as what you might call his fingerprints, of a very long-standing agreement between senior members of the church to obstruct justice and to cover up a particularly revolting felony. Now, isn't it amazing that this is always discussed as if it's the church's internal affair? Why do we make the assumption that the church can be the judge in this case, in its own case? What is the law doing? I'll give you an example from the United States. Mm-hmm. Why does the Justice Department not demand the extradition of Cardinal Law of Boston,
yes,
who fled the jurisdiction rather than answer questions under oath after it had been revealed that he'd sheltered and protected appalling pederasts? Why do we say, well, he's gone to a foreign town now, that's the end of our inquiry? Isn't there anyone in this country, any officer of the law, who will say, we have to do something to protect and vindicate these children?
But the reality of being able to charge the Pope of all people with crimes against humanity will never happen.
Well, let's see if he feels like coming to England and testing the proposition. The alternative is we publicly declare that if you can call yourself a priest of any kind, or a high priest, as the Pope is, you don't have to answer any questions about the rape and torture of children. That would be a grotesque situation. Are we to say that there's a category of person who lives and commits crime and covers up crime above and beyond the law, or not? And if so, how are we going to live with ourselves? And what are we going to tell the children?
Well, yeah, and how does the Pope sleep at night? But that's exactly what's been going on for years and years, with often complicity, not just of the Vatican, but of our criminal justice system. And I'll take off where Christopher Hitchens left, which was that, take up where he left off, which is that we have never seen a bishop or higher up prosecuted in this country for their aiding and abetting cover up or collusion in sex crimes against children. And when is that going to happen? And of course, Hitchens pointed to the most egregious case involving Cardinal Law, who was rewarded with this plum position at the Vatican.
And by the way, he's the College of Cardinals now, who picked the current Pope. Another cardinal, there's a Cardinal Bertone of Italy. He was in Chile this week, and he was responding to comments about this Pope scandal. And he's trying to pass the buck. He's trying to blame the whole issue on something else. You'll hear him through an interpreter explaining what the real problem is.
Which of psychologists?
Many psychologists and psychiatrists have shown that there is no link between celibacy and paedophilia, but many others have shown, and I've been told recently, that there is a relationship between homosexuality and paedophilia. That is the truth. I read it in a document written by psychologists, so that is the problem.
Allora, este es el problema.
The comments by Cardinal Bertone, the Vatican's second highest authority, has provoked anger from gay rights groups.
Well, and this is so ridiculous, because this is what the church has been trying to do. William Donohue in this country has been trying to blame the Catholic crimes against children on homosexuality. Well, there are that would be like blaming pedophilia, a pedophile who goes after young girls, on heterosexuality. I mean, it's irrelevant whether a pedophile might have consensual relations with an adult male at some point in his life and then goes on to prey on teenage boys is irrelevant, because he's a predator. He's violating the law. He's molesting kids against their will. And whether he's molesting boys or he's molesting girls is beside the point.
Don't most of them go after girls? Don't most pedophiles go after girls?
Most of the Catholic priests in the study that we did tend to target boys more than girls.
But in general.
But some of them go after, yes, most child molesters are preying on little girls. And I think that we aren't getting the full picture with the Catholic Church on girls yet either. I mean, I think there's a lot more female victims than we know about. And so this is a, but this is the whole Vatican rag. This is what they're saying, that we are not responsible for any of these problems. Blame the homosexuals for our priests. He blames his underlings for things that he knew. They take no responsibility. And so why shouldn't he be arrested? And we do have that case wending its way up our civil courts, that we will see what happens, where we have civil cases in this country suing the Pope and looking to get depositions. So we may have more of a chance to arrest him here in America, and wouldn't that be interesting?
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Coming up, we'll be talking with William Lobdell, investigative journalist, about why he lost his religion, in part due to his experience with the scandal of pedophilia within the church.
Hello, my name's Bernie from Sarnia, Ontario, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker.
And we have on the phone with us from California, William Lobdell. Bill Lobdell is the author of the 2009 memoir, Losing My Religion, How I Lost My Faith Reporting on Religion in America and Found Unexpected Peace. It's a book about what happened to him gradually as a devout religion reporter for the LA Times. He received an Emperor Has No Clothes Award from the Freedom From Religion Foundation last fall, and his acceptance speech, Free at Last, is reprinted in the April issue of Free Thought Today, which is the Freedom From Religion Foundation's newspaper. It's full of photographs. It's a fantastic speech. So why don't you contact us and ask for a complimentary issue of the April Free Thought Today if you're not already a subscriber or member. Go to ffrf.org to get one. We'd be glad to mail it to you. William's speech can also be heard or viewed online, by the way, at ffrf.org.
And we thought of William Lobdell as a guest to talk more about, the Catholic Church and the pedophilia scandal, because his experiences covering a previous round of scandal and litigation were pivotal to his leaving religion. Welcome back to Free Thought Radio, William.
Thank you for having me.
So it's been quite a couple of weeks with the Catholic scandal, and are you still engaged in covering any of that? I know you have a media business.
Yeah, I do. I write freelance for different publications and columns and things like that, so I've been following it quite closely.
So it's all deja vu all over again.
It is. It's not surprising. It's, I think that the, especially the American media got, or readers, let's say, got fatigued on this. It's not a pleasant subject to read about, day in and day out. And so it needed to get to a certain level of newsworthiness for people to pick it back up. And so this stuff has been happening all along. But right now, because it involves the Pope, it becomes sexier.
You were part of that for many, many years. Of course, you were the religion reporter for the LA Times, and For a decade or so, you covered these issues. And did you burn out on the issue, or are you still watching it?
I'm still watching. I did burn out on it. It's when you talk to and you had a survivor on. When you talk to enough survivors, and I've talked to hundreds of them, it really takes a toll on you. They went through something so horrific that it's almost indescribable. And when you get close to them, it starts to take a toll on your well-being as well. So for a while I had to kind of back off, but I'm glad to see this out in the open again, and it's no surprise that people all the way up to the Pope are involved, because the Catholic Church is a very hierarchical system, and you just don't make a move without orders from above. And there'll be many more revelations, I'm sure, coming out.
Well, maybe one of the reasons this is gained such traction is, you were saying, there's been some fatigue on the coverage in this country, but it's become worldwide, and it's the newspapers all around the world covering it now.
Yeah, and it will. It's because of the way the church is set up, and people who aren't Catholic can't really understand this, but the church is going to act the same way in every diocese around the world. And so if there's scandal in America, then of course there's going to be scandal in Ireland and Germany and Canada and in every country around the world, and it's a pattern set up. And it's not really, I've always called it it's not really a sex scandal, it's a cover-up scandal by the bishops, archbishops, cardinals, and the Pope himself.
Now, did you know about Father Keesley before you retired, or was this?
Yeah, I ran across him, but I didn't follow him closely until now.
He's up in Oakland, California, and then I guess there's some documents that come to light. He actually pleaded to be defrocked, apparently, and that was denied.
Well, yeah, it was denied for 2 years.
The bishop worked very hard, which is unusual. The bishop worked hard to get him out of the priesthood, and the pope then in charge of this type of discipline didn't want him dragged his feet because, A, they didn't want that scandal, but, B, they are a shortage of priests, and so it didn't matter if he was convicted.
You know, they'll take anyone.
Yeah, no, Roger Mahoney in Los Angeles, he had two convicted child molesters working in the archdiocese, and he knew about it.
Well, it goes all the way to the top.
Yeah, they get punished if they come out against, you know, if they go to the civil authorities in the past, but if they cover it up, if they move them, if they put them in the path of more innocent kids.
Now, you did interview, you're saying, over 100 victims, and I wonder, I mean, you may want to talk about particular cases that you covered, but I wondered, in your book, you touch on the Rita Millar story. I think that you met her and her mother many years after. They filed the first civil lawsuit, I believe, practically, yes. One of the first in 84.
Yeah, this is a woman that she was an immigrant from Mexico, Latin America, certainly, and she took great pride that this priest took an interest in her daughter, this, you know, popular priest, and it was the dad wasn't around, and this is something the mom had great pride about, and the priest would come to their house every, I think it was Tuesday night, and take the kid out, who was 14, 15 at the time, for her religious training, and he would take her to a hotel room where she'd be raped by up to 7 priests, and she eventually got pregnant, and the priests, for some reason, this is the worst part of the story for me, but the priest went to the mom and said, your daughter's been sinful with apparently a boy in school. We need to ship her off to the Philippines so she doesn't bring shame upon the family. And so the girl, who was, I think, 15 at the time, went to the Philippines, gave birth, almost died in childbirth because of the lack of health care there. And the church denied this the whole time until there was actually a paternity test that showed that one of the priests was actually the father.
He fled the country, didn't he?
Yeah.
And well, do we know if he's still alive? I mean, he went on the lam, I remember.
Yeah, I think, you know, he has died, but he came back to apologize to her. And if I'm remembering this correctly, it's been a while. The Archdiocese of Los Angeles begged him not to come because of the potential legal problems if he set foot on American soil. He was living in the Philippines on a church salary. But he came, and I think they actually had a meeting, and he apologized to her.
Well, that's just petty gossip, according to the Pope.
Yeah, I'm afraid that apology doesn't go very far with me.
No, but, and what's so amazing about this scandal is that it's not as though, I do think there's some problems with the celibacy and especially the sexual lack of sexual education and knowledge within the church is sort of frozen in the Middle Ages. But this scandal wouldn't have happened if the bishops, once they knew this, they had a problem, that they would report them to authorities and apologize to the victim. And because they didn't do that, they're now, at least in the United States, they've paid over $1 billion out in settlements. And it's the only thing they really listen to is the court systems.
The money.
Well, yeah, when their pocketbooks hurt. But even there, you interviewed the mother primarily of Rita Millar, who I remember in your speech before our convention, you said she was just so consumed with guilt because she didn't know what was happening. Her daughter was too embarrassed to tell her mother, right? She didn't think she'd believe her.
Yeah, that's, you know, she doesn't really understand what's happening. This guy is supposed to be Christ's literal representative on earth, and he's also, these priests are who do it, they're not these guys in, you know, overcoats and shady characters. They are generally the most popular person in the in their own little community, and so they mostly stay silent because of you know, shame of not thinking they're going to be believed, of going up against this powerful person. And so this woman kept shoving her daughter out the door on Tuesday nights. And when you talk to her, the pain is, it's indescribable. I'm not quite sure how to say it, but I've seen as a journalist, I cover a lot of tragedies and things like that. And there's nothing like this intense guilt,
a parental
agony,
parental failure. You know, they even call these guys father. They're a member of the family. They're part of your life, and you must respect them. And you can see how the church would want to back off, because these guys have been sanctified or ordained. There was a sacrament performed on their lives and ministry, which means they are God's representatives. So if one of them comes forward as having committed a crime like this, well, it just cannot have happened, or it would invalidate the whole sacrament.
It's true, and it goes really deep. When I was at the Times, I would lobby very heavily for describing the acts as what they were. If they were sodomized, if they were raped, to spell that out in the paper. And even in the Times, which is a fairly godless place, they just thought that would be too much, because these are holy men and people, you know, believe, you know, have great respect for them, and it'd just be too much for readers to take to say, you know, Father so-and-so, you know, raped this five-year-old boy.
Mm-hmm. So molested, which maybe sounds like fondling.
Or inappropriate.
Yeah, fondling.
Inappropriate touching.
I always really try to, because I thought people would take this more seriously if they knew. I mean, they do some really, really sick stuff to these kids, and it's sanitized by the media. And I think the reason why it's sanitized is, what, to Dan's point, is that, you know, that they're thought of as being some almost otherworldly, or, you know, above us. And that's a very intentional thing the church has done over the centuries, is to give, you know, priests special powers. You know, they weren't always, had to be celibate, but they made them celibate. They're the only ones that can turn the bread and wine into the literal body and blood of Christ. They're all these things,
yep,
that only they can do. And so they're apart from the people.
Well,
it gives them a tremendous amount of power.
We've been covering black collar crimes at Free Thought Today since 1987 or so. And this kind of, remember Rita Miller, I thought he was God's representative on earth, or Jesus's representative. He is God. You know, you hear this chorus from the priests, I mean, from the victims of the priests, that they really regard them not as more than mortal. So, of course, that's a great power.
It's a great power, and it's also what really messes them up emotionally, sexually, spiritually, because it's not, obviously sexual abuse is horrible on any level, but then when you get someone that you were taught, you know, takes in the Mass, they take the place of Christ at a point in the Mass. It's something very deeply disturbing to these people's souls when it happens, and it's why they can never get over it.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio, and we're talking with William Lobdell, the former LA Times religion writer who covered a lot of the scandal over cover-up in the Roman Catholic Church, and the author of his memoir, Losing My Religion. And we're going to be right back to finish our conversation with William Lobdell.
My name is Bill Smythe, and I'm from Portland, Oregon. And I've been a practicing atheist for the last 40 years. And this is Bill on Free Thought Radio.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought Today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio, and we are speaking with William Lobdell, who was an investigative reporter with the LA Times.
Religion investigative.
And he has written a really beautiful memoir called Losing My Religion, How I Lost My Faith Reporting on Religion in America and Found Unexpected Peace.
So, Bill, Yes, there are some bad apples in every bunch, right? So, of course, there are going to be some bad priests. But how do you respond to the charge that really we shouldn't blame the whole church for the sins of a few bad apples? Aren't most priests really good priests?
In a word, no. Let me explain why. The priests are very, obviously, a tight brotherhood. They live in communion most of the time. They know, you remember back in your college days, if you live in a dorm, you're going to know, for example, if somebody has a intense and inappropriate interest in a child and is spending the night with a child behind locked doors in a single bed. And if your colleague suddenly got removed from a parish and then got popped up in another parish a few months later, you know what's happening. But the amount of priests that turned in their brother priests, there's 46,000 priests in America. There's a handful, you can count them on two hands, of priests that turned in their brother priests who were molesting kids. So they would rather stay silent. And there's some priests that don't know what's going on. I get that. But there are many, many, many priests who knew exactly what was going on, but they knew if they spoke out and turned their brother priest in, they'd be labeled a snitch, their career would be over. And this did happen. There was a really interesting case in San Francisco where a priest, and it was because he was a former prosecutor who became a priest, so he really wasn't indoctrinated too much in that culture, and he walked into on his pastor who was quote unquote wrestling naked with a boy, and
suspicious.
Yeah, he went to his superiors, including William Levada, who's now in the Pope's old job is kind of the chief enforcer of the church.
Inquisition.
And they said, you know what, you don't want to go forward with this. It was probably a misunderstanding. You didn't really see what you saw. He said, well, it's my duty to go report to the civil authorities. So he reported to the civil authorities this. He was demoted. He was sent to for mental evaluation. And thankfully, the molester in question actually felt bad and admitted that he had molested three boys. And this priest won a huge whistleblower lawsuit against the Archdiocese of San Francisco. But it's typical of what happens to a priest who actually turns in a child molester. It's just extraordinary.
And you're saying that was one of the few cases you knew of like that?
Very few. There's a Father Thomas Doyle who,
yes,
in 1985, blew the whistle on all this stuff and said, this is a huge problem. This is going to happen in the future. You're going to have to pay billions of dollars, blah, blah, blah. And he was a rising star in the Catholic Church, and he was drummed out and made a chaplain he had to go overseas and serve in the army, I think.
But he was right.
He was right. He was 100% right.
Because when you read and I give him a lot of credit and have corresponded with him a little bit, but when you read his warning to the church, he was trying to get the attention of the Catholic conferences, he was putting it to them in dollar signs. I mean, I think he knew they wouldn't respond to the human issue, the pain. He was warning them, you'll be, going bankrupt in billions of dollars. And even that, look how telling that is.
Yeah, I mean, he was absolutely right on. But there's an arrogance within the church that, no one can get to us. And for good reason. I mean, no one could really get to them until this sort of tipping point with the internet and people being able to talk to each other and a couple of people who turned the Catholic Church for a long time. The reason why they could put a lid on this is, part of the reason is, they had these secret files. So if a district attorney or a plaintiff's attorney asked for the priest's personnel file, you'd get this file that was all glowing stuff. Because you didn't ask for the secret file that the bishop kept under lock and key, and in that file had all the bad stuff.
Until
they realized there are two sets of files that they could really get to the evidence.
And they still, I mean, this is still the church protocol. They have these instructions on the bishops, and only the bishop has the key. I mean, wow, what a...
it's pretty extraordinary, and people like Thomas Doyle will actually speak out. There's another monk named Patrick Wall who was a fixer for the church, and he, after a couple of years, he had a conscience, and he said, I can't do this anymore. So he walked away and became kind of the plaintiff's best friend because he knew exactly how to steer steer evidence or where it was hidden and how to get it.
So did you catch Christopher Hitchens and Richard Dawkins proposing that maybe they could arrest the Pope when he comes on British soil?
I did. I thought that was wonderful. I imagine it's quite the long shot. But
nice to think about, though.
Well, thanks for joining us today, Bill.
Okay, thanks for having us.
Your book,
me.
William Lobdell's book is called Losing My Religion, How I Lost My Faith, Reporting on Religion in America and Found Unexpected Peace.
And it is a must-read if you don't have it. I think we sell it at ffrf.org, but you can get it at any bookstore, and it's an excellent book. So thank you so much for joining us and for your investigative reporting.
Anytime.
We also want to thank our producer and engineer, Brian Terrani, our announcer, Buzz Kemper. Go to ffrf.org/radio for archives and podcasts of the show, which broadcasts in Madison, Wisconsin.
And you can ask for more information at ffrf.org, phone 1-800-335-4021. Dan gave you a reminder that our guest today, William Lobdell, gave a fantastic speech at the last annual convention of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. It's in the April issue. You can get a free copy by calling 1-800-335-4021 or going to our website. Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. I hope someday.